You're listening to the only daily talk show in North America covering the world of football. This is World Football Daily.
Yes, 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 yes! It hits the back of the net! Oh my goodness me!
The world's game.
Oh, you're beautiful! What a headshot! What a head!
Our religion.
Brilliant goal! What an equalizer!
Our passion.
Go, go, USA! Oh, it's incredible! You could not write a script like this!
World Football Daily serves up the best football talk 5 days a week.
Oh, you will never, ever see a game quite like this! Unbelievable!
Live young, evian. The slogan of the bottled water company, the football team, might be changing their slogan to beating the unbeatable as Evian get a 2-0 win against the league leaders PSG in Ligue 1 action last night. Sensational Suarez was at it again against Norwich. What can Ruddy do as Ruddy bloody brilliant Luis Suarez bags four in a 5-1 stomping at Anfield? And Moyes is in a mess as his old side get their first win at Old Trafford in 11 years. Everton beating the Red Devils as United slip to ninth in the table. Plenty of Premier League action to be discussed here on Thursday's edition of World Football Daily. I am, of course, Oliver the Deuce Wilson, bringing you the news and the many views from around the world of football. The Brazuca is the World Cup ball released earlier this week. We put a picture of it on Twitter, and I can tell you that that picture was released the instant that we were allowed to, of course, of all embargo rules and regulations that were placed on the announcement of what the World Cup ball would look like. What do you think of it? Does it look too much like a load of glow sticks joined together on a football? Does it really get you sparked up for a World Cup in Brazil? Is it bringing that samba style across to you, or is it just a mess of colour? Let us know. Show at worldfootballdaily.com, at WFootballDaily on Twitter, 310-909-8483 is the rant line, and of course the Facebook page as well is where you can catch us. We'll be continuing to cover the World Cup this week. The ball was released earlier in the week. The draw is made tomorrow. The preliminary draws are being made as we're doing the show today. It's World Cup fever. And to be honest, if it wasn't for the sensational night, and I do mean sensational night of Premier League football last night, I think we would just be kind of talking about the build-up to the World Cup draw today. Instead, though, we had a magic amount of goals. Nicholas Bentner scores for Arsenal. Who would have believed that? Five for Liverpool. A 3-2 win for Aston Villa away at Southampton. Did not expect that one. I do want to read a quick tweet that I received earlier today, actually, from our very good friend of the show, Mr. Jeff Levitt, who, of course, is a big Aston Villa fan. I don't know if anybody's recognised this, but whenever Jeff tweets us and emails us on the show and we give it a read, it's always to do with Aston Villa. And Jeff saying, we don't need the ball, we don't need the ball. We are Aston Villa, we just don't need the ball. After Southampton had 70% of the possession last night, yet the counter-attacking football that we saw at the beginning of the season from Aston Villa, allowing them to prevail at St Mary's with a 3-2 win. Absolutely stonking form for Villa shown last night. The return of Fabian Delph, and by the way, everyone is talking about Luis Suarez's goals. Fabian Delph's strike, an absolute beast from 25 yards. I don't think anybody expected that coming. Scoring his first Premier League goal for Aston Villa, and a wonderful way to do it, grabbing a 3-2 win for Villa down in at Southampton last night. We saw Chelsea almost stumble against Gus Poyet's Sunderland. Going there for a big club is always difficult, no matter what the situation that the club is in. Swansea with a big 3-0 win, ending Newcastle's fantastic run of form. City, a vital away win. And Tottenham Hotspur as well, AVB with the pressure on, getting that win against Fulham last night. There's plenty to talk about. I'll be joined a little later on by Mr. Raphael Geller of Kicking It with Raphael on worldfootballdaily.com's podcast. Can't wait to have a chat with him him. It's been too long. We should have had him on far earlier in the show because he's a really, really good guy to chat football with and have a discussion with over Twitter and whatnot. We'll have him on the show a little later on. But for now, it's as usual, the usual Rafa, and big Rafa Gonzalez, as I like to call him, who's kicking it with a bit of, I believe, Ben Hayward today from a bit of Spanish football. Rafa, take it away, my good man.
Hola, es Rafael de World Football Daily. You may have guessed it. Today we are heading to Spain to talk all things La Liga with one of the best Spanish football correspondents we have on our show, an editor for Spanish football at gold.com. You can even find him linking up with the lovely Sophie doing a La Liga podcast of their own. I've listened and loved it and use it regularly. Based in the country, so it's true when I say that he's reporting live. And joining World Football Today is Ben Hayward. Ben, it's a pleasure to have you on our program. Thank you very much for coming.
It's a pleasure, Rafa. It's a pleasure, and quite the introduction. I'm glad that you've had a listen to La Liga Lounge and liked it, because we always have fun on there. So it's great to come on. I mean, I met Sophie for your show, mm-hmm. So yeah, it's good stuff, man.
Yeah. Well, we love Sophie here. I mean, obviously, she was a host of the show, so she's obviously quite talented, and it's very easy listening. Like I said, I listen regularly and I use it. To kind of form my opinion here on this show sometimes. Anyways, I meant to ask you this, and it's not so much La Liga, and I really want to focus on La Liga with you today, but we've heard a lot about the reaction, here in the U.S., in England, the general footballing world, to FIFA's pot logic. But before we jump into La Liga, Ben, I kind of wanted to see what the general reaction is from the people of Spain regarding the pot placement and potential group pairings for the upcoming draw, World Cup, that is.
Well it's I think it's a bit of a FIFA faux pas, isn't it? It's
sure.
So chaotic, everything that FIFA seems to be doing right now, not just the pot placement, but also the Ballon d'Or, you know, the votes, voting being extended suddenly, and now this pot scenario, and then with the South American teams, having to be seeded, and there's a pot X. It's all a little bit confusing. But yeah, I don't know. I think from a Spanish point of view, I mean, obviously they don't want to end up in a group with France. They had two very difficult games against France in the qualifiers. But you know, I mean, there's some potential banana skins in the in any of the pots. In any case, and Spain are good enough to not fear anyone. I think even in a difficult group, Spain will be confident of getting through it.
I mean, that's kind of how I feel. I mean, if I'm Spain, I'm feeling confident no matter where I'm going to be placed. So it doesn't really bother me too much. Now, if you turn to sport recently, you see that Barcelona have contacted Manchester City. Now, potentially, they're going to offer, what, like 50 million euros for Kun Agüero? If this is true, what is the likelihood of that transfer going through? And if it does this complicate any things with Neymar, at the club at all, or no?
I think it's a difficult one, Rafa, because Agüero's come out and said that he likes Barcelona, mm-hmm. but he also likes playing week in, week out, which right. is fair enough. And you look at the Barcelona forward line, and obviously at the moment it's a little bit different because Messi is injured. But when Messi isn't injured, he's in the team, clearly. And you can only really play with three forwards. I mean, three is already quite a lot of forwards. Mm-hmm. So, Neymar's not going to be happy to be on the bench. You've got Alexis Sanchez, who's really coming good under Tata Martino. And Pedro, who's beginning to be a little bit unhappy with the rotation, and then Teo, who isn't hardly playing at all, and you know, the other day came out and said that he might consider leaving if things go on like this.
Sure.
I'm not sure. Kun Agüero is a fantastic player, and he'd be great. And I know they are looking for a striker to bring in. I'm not sure he'd be happy with the kind of reduced playing time that he'd get at Barcelona. So I see this as a very difficult move. to be honest.
Sure. And I've also read that Pepe Reina has come out and made the claim that he would love to come and play for Barcelona, and it'd be a great honor to play at the Camp Nou for Barcelona as well. But at the same time, Ben, I also feel like he's come out and said that several times before.
There were some old quotes actually that were dug up. I mean, this is very 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 crafty with a lot of stories that you see.
Mm-hmm.
There were some quotes from a few years back when he said that he'd like to play for Barcelona, but now I genuinely think he's happy at City, and he values his playing time. I think he's got a coach now in Pellegrini that really suits him. They're playing really nice attacking football. And I think he would actually think twice about moving to Barcelona at the moment.
Both Real Madrid and Barcelona were fined recently by Spain's competition authority. I'm sorry, I don't know exactly the whole story, but it has to do over TV rights, like a TV rights deal. That's about as much as I know, Ben. Can you shed any more light on this whole situation? And is it really worth it? Do we need to care as a footballing public?
Well, I think we need to care because it's kind of damaging La Liga. You know, we've seen that even Atletico are up there competing and they're doing great under Diego Simeone. But every time Simeone talks about it, he says, well, you know, he's asked what's the difference between Real Madrid and Atletico Madrid, and he says 400 million euros. and it's true. I mean, that is the difference in their annual income. And a lot of that income, all right, obviously Real Madrid and Barcelona are the two biggest clubs in the world and the two richest clubs in the world. But the way that the Spanish television rights are structured, it's just making those two richer and richer and richer because they're negotiating their own rights, whereas other teams are all just grouped together and only getting a small piece of the pie. So it's making the rich richer and the poor poorer, and it's not helping La Liga at all. And I think we should care about it because not only is it not helping La Liga, I mean, go back 10 years in La Liga, you had Valencia challenging, you had Deportivo challenging, and other teams too. You know, it's much more open than now. But you know, this could be transferred to a sort of in Europe as well, and on a European level. I mean, those two are just getting stronger and stronger, ridiculously strong teams, and they're going to continue buying the best. And we may see that this monopoly that we see in Spain eventually. I don't know. Obviously, in Europe, there are other very rich teams like Bayern, like Manchester United, but those teams are also becoming much stronger than the rest. So I think it's kind of, even though it's a Spanish issue, it's also kind of a more global issue.
Sure. Now, you've written a piece that you've posted to Twitter, and our audience can go and find you on Twitter, at BG Hayward. But you wrote about Barcelona's Senyera kit, which could potentially, which could potentially be cursed. Now, look, I get it. You have to look the part, basically. And when you're a team like Barcelona, Real Madrid, or even Glasgow Rangers, for that matter, I mean, I understand this. You're expected to don a particular color. So maybe Barcelona players just don't feel themselves in this Senyera kit. Is that the case? What's going on? Are they going to burn this kit at the end of the season?
I'm not so sure. I think, as someone said to me on Twitter, you know, their away kit last season, which by the way was horrible, was kind of similar colours, and they did generally pretty well wearing that kit. This one, it's not really happening, and I don't know. I don't think we can talk about this kit being cursed, but it's certainly interesting to analyse. But in four official games, they've only scored two, and they haven't won, and now they've lost in it. And I don't know. It's a very popular kit. If you walk around Barcelona, if you walk around Catalonia, it's very popular because obviously
the flags,
the national Catalan national flags, the Senyera, it's the national colours, and Catalans love it. But elsewhere in Spain, it has kind of ostracised the fans a little bit because they, you know, they think, well, I'm Spanish and I'm a Barca fan, but this whole, like, you know, pro-Catalan stance is maybe, you know, fans from other parts of Spain and maybe other countries don't identify with that so much.
Sure.
And maybe don't like it so much. Another thing which is a little bit strange is if you look at the games that Barcelona have played in that kit, all of those teams have had red on their kits. So even though it's an away kit, which in the, obviously the purpose of an away kit is that you don't clash with the home team, you know, they played... AC Milan have red on their kit. They played Osasuna with red on their kit.
Yeah.
Atletico. And that seems strange to me. Why not wear a kit with that's a completely different colour? And then there's going to be no problem. So I don't know. I do think perhaps it was on behalf of Sandro Rosé, the president, perhaps more of a political tool than just, hey, nice colours.
Sure.
It's definitely a political stance behind it.
Fair enough. Jumping to the other side of El Clasico, real quickly, how sorely missed is Ronaldo from Real Madrid? It looks like the absence has allowed Gareth Bale the opportunity to find his feet a little bit at the Bernabeu. Granted, a hat trick against bottom feeder Valle is not really something, you know, Ronnie can't do or hasn't done, I'm sure. But will they ever really, and I mean really, miss or need Ronaldo at Madrid? Or... Is any Galactico, or are all Galacticos really replaceable at Los Blancos?
I don't think. I think Ronaldo's replaceable, and I don't think Messi is replaceable. I mean, those two guys are so good. It's such fantastic footballers that obviously when they're out, then it does show, and you know that's why. That's why Madrid went out and bought Gareth Bale, and that's why Barcelona went out and bought Neymar, because with the other two, it's you're putting all your eggs in one basket, and then when one gets injured, then you know Barcelona struggled last season when Messi went out. Ronaldo hardly ever gets injured, but when he is out, the percentage of Real Madrid wins drops dramatically. So, you know, it's understandable that that both teams have gone out and signed these players. Let's say, obviously, Neymar's still only 21. He's settled in quite well, but I think he's going to need some time to adapt to European football and Spanish football. Bale, he has, you know, slow start, but he didn't really have a pre-season. He's actually been excellent in the last few games, and now I think it's 9 goals in 13 games. And 6 assists and
coming straight off an injury as well.
Kind of stepping into his shoes.
Yeah, and coming straight off an injury, like I said, I'm pretty impressed with him. I'm not gonna lie. I'm sure it's easy for him, or a little bit easier. It's, you know, it's not like he's stepping on the field with Tottenham. It's a different team out there in white. Anyways.
Yeah. Well, I'm a Tottenham fan, and we definitely miss him. We definitely do. So,
fair
there
enough.
There you go.
fair enough. Anyways, so. Now, I complain a lot about how we always talk and focus so much on Real Madrid and Barcelona, and I have a friend who would literally slap me if I didn't mention this next club, but Atletico Madrid, and you touched on them a little bit earlier. I mean, I don't even know where to start, Ben. I wrote them off this season after yet another star in Falcao leaving for greener pastures, but they've still managed to not only stay competitive, but really continue to push towards the top of the table. Can you try to explain... some of their success in La Liga, which is clearly, you know, built to benefit two clubs, not one of them being Atletico Madrid.
That's right. I mean, it's a great story. They've been fantastic, and I think Simeone, for a start, is a hugely competitive coach. He's got that real Argentine competitive streak, and he just wants to win and all the time, and that seems to really transmit to the players. They play with incredible intensity. They play with a lot of passion, never say die attitude. And it might sound a bit cliched, but in the big games against the big teams, they can really raise their game.
Sure.
And you know, look at their team as well. I mean, perhaps last season. The season before, even though they did have Falcao, who is fantastic, as you say, they were perhaps missing a little bit of strength and depth. Well, I think they've got that a bit more this season. I think Villa was a shrewd signing from Barcelona on the cheap. as something of a replacement for Falcao, but really the replacement for Falcao was already there. I mean, Diego Costa has just stepped into this new role, and he's been absolutely phenomenal this season. The extra responsibility on his shoulders, I mean, he's just he's a sort of similar mentality to Simeone, really. That kind of passion as a player. They're both South American, obviously. They both give absolutely everything. They both kind of maybe play a little bit on the edge. Simeone was always on the edge as a player, wasn't he? Risking maybe sending off. But just that competitive spirit that they have, and they all work so hard for each other. You know, the spirit of the collective that they have, I think it's fantastic. They've got a wonderful goalkeeper in Courtois, very strong defence. Felipe Luis going forward is fantastic. Some just great players all through the team. Gabby in midfield never stops running, and just that whole spine. So they've got a lot of quality. And you know, in this season in which Barcelona and Real Madrid both have new coaches, who knows? Maybe Atletico Madrid might just come through the middle and take it. You know, I mean, it'd be a great story.
Well, I mean, and you kind of touched on it right there for me. We've recently talked on the show. We've brought up the fantastical notion of teams going unbeaten in their seasons, really referencing Bayern Munich and Paris Saint-Germain. Now, I know that there won't be an unbeaten team in La Liga, Ben, but an even bigger feat, for me at least, would be to see a team outside of Barca or Real Madrid lifting the trophy at the end of the season. Is that a possibility this season? Is it real that we could potentially see somebody else lift the trophy this year?
Well, listen, we're 15 games into the season, and Atletico Madrid are level on points with Barcelona. I mean, 40 points out of 45. They went to Real Sociedad and won. They've been to Sevilla and won. They went to the Bernabeu and won. I mean, among those fixtures, they've had some really, really difficult ones, and they've come through them. And I think we really have to take them seriously. I mean, winning at Madrid, obviously they did it in the final of the Copa last season, which is the first time they've been in Madrid in 13 years. And now they did it in La Liga, and when they did it in La Liga, it was even more convincing. And I think the key is going to be how they do, perhaps in the two games against Barcelona as well. We're going to see one coming up in January. You know, we saw in the Spanish Supercopa, they weren't afraid to play Barcelona. They drew 1-1 at home and 0-0 away at Camp Nou. They missed out on the trophy and away goals, but it was more than that. It was a kind of a statement of like saying, okay, well, we're not afraid to play you guys anymore.
Right.
And they're clearly not afraid of Madrid anymore. And I think we have to take them absolutely seriously. I mean, they've got, for me, they've got a stronger squad this season, a bigger squad to be able to maybe last a little bit longer. I think the problem last season was they had a wonderful start, and then they kind of just, when it got to sort of midway through the second half of the season, you know, obviously the players were tired, they maybe didn't have alternatives to turn to. But this season, I can definitely see them going all the way.
Sure. I just want to put you on the spot here a little bit, Ben, and this is just for fun, and you could very well be completely unknowing that this is going on, but don't worry, the powers of recorded radio will come through here no matter what and show you in the best light. But Tenerife play host to Las Palmas tonight in the Spanish Segunda Division. Do you have any deep insider tips that I might be able to use if I were a betting man, Ben?
I must admit, I do not right now.
That's totally fine.
It's a game, some of these regional, it's an island, some of these other derby games in Spain would be really fascinating to go to, and I'd love to kind of travel to some of these games, because I just think the atmosphere would be tremendous. But as for inside knowledge, no, I'll tell you on your own. Sorry about that.
No problem. I wasn't expecting it, but I just wanted to try to put you on the spot a little bit, Ben. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for making your time today. I feel really very bad because we've definitely gone over the time that I've promised you. So that's my fault, especially this time because I was asking the questions. But I just had I have such a list of questions for you, and there's still so many that I left off. We can try it next time. Thank you very, very much, Ben, for coming on. And everybody, please go check out his work online. Whether you're reading him, listening to him, he's available all over. Check him out, Ben Hayward of Gold.com. Ben, thank you very much.
Rafael, it's an absolute pleasure as always. And you take care, and I'll speak to you soon.
Cheers. Again, Ben Hayward of Gold.com, of La Liga Lounge with Sophie. Tremendous guy. I really appreciate the time that he gave us today. And again, there was so much more I want to cover. He kind of touched on it a little bit regarding the financial pressures on teams outside of Real Madrid and Barcelona. I kind of wanted to discuss that a little bit further, particularly as it pertains to Atletico. I think that that's kind of a very interesting topic, considering the fact that they're able to push, and able to consistently grow as a club and as a team, and like I said, push for the top of the table. It's just beyond impressive to me. And considering the constraints that they're under, I'm very, very impressed. And I'm not just kissing up to our editor of the blog, Gio Franco, who's a diehard Atleti fan. Juice, I don't know where your heart lies, but do you think there's at all a chance that we could see a non-Barcelona, a non-Real Madrid champion at the end of the season this year in La Liga?
Well, Rafa, to answer your question, I can't see Atletico pipping in the long run of a La Liga championship, pipping Barca or Real Madrid to that title race. I mean, sure, we're seeing this wonderful start from Diego Simeone's side. I still want to see what happens in January, though, of who is going to be pinched from Atletico and end up playing elsewhere around with some of the other giants of European football. It's been a fantastic start to the season, and I'm loving the fact that Barca slipped up and we do see Atletico on top of the La Liga table, albeit joint with Barca at the moment. But in the long run, I think it's too much to ask. I have been wrong, though. I did say that Arsenal probably weren't going to be title contenders, even with the signing of Mesut Ozil. And look who I'm looking at there. Joining me on the show today is Rafa, but it's not the usual Rafa. Although, considering the last week and a half we've had, I don't know which one is the usual Rafa anymore. But joining me here today is a man to kick it about all things football, Rafael Geller from Kicking It with Rafael on worldfootballdaily.com. Rafa, mate, first and foremost, should it be Rafael? Should it be Rafa? Do I need to distinguish between you and our producer and co-host here at World Football Daily?
Well, Ollie, here in Israel, we say Rafi, but I'm not sure you'll be able to pronounce that. But you can go with Rafael.
Well, I don't mean to cause any offense when I say this, but I think in terms of my Hebrew and knowledge of that, I think I only get to a bit of chutzpah, you know, and a little bit of Yiddish. That's all I've got in my locker when it comes to that. So I will try my best, but I like with many of the names that we get on World Football Daily, I'll end up butchering it, I'm sure. Rafael, you obviously on the Kickabout blog, you talk on Kicking It with Rafael, you talk so much about a number of the different leagues around Europe. So the same question that Rafa asked me to you, I guess. Do you see Atletico Madrid being able to hold off the advances of Barca and Real Madrid and actually maintain their lofty position and potentially win a La Liga title this season?
No. And you know what? I just asked that to Andy West, who's a La Liga writer for BBC. And he told me what I'm about to tell you. I think there's going to be changes. I think Koke is going to leave in January for United or, you know, who knows who else. But he's a fantastic player. It was amazing covering him here in Israel on the U21 team. David Villa, you don't know what you're going to get from him. He's an older guy. And I don't know. I'm just not convinced that they can keep up this pace. You know, it doesn't seem likely, especially with the moves that Barcelona and Madrid will probably be making in January. I think what they're doing is very respectable, and I applaud them. And we've always seen Atletico Madrid do a good job of keeping up and having all these star strikers. But I think what's more amazing, no one's talking about, is Villarreal, who was, came up from the second division led by a rejuvenated Giovanni Dos Santos, you know, suddenly there in the top five. So that's pretty cool. I think they should be getting more attention. But that's just my opinion.
the rise and I suppose the resurface of the Yellow Submarine back into La Liga football, how well they're doing this year, has been a great story to watch. I mean, we all remember being entertained by them so much and wanting to see kind of Marcos Senna smashing those long-range strikes, see Riquelme mixing it up in and around the 18-yard box with that dazzling skill that he especially used to possess, the Argentinian. And the loss of them was a big loss in terms of Spanish football and the flair. They played very attractive attacking football, and it is, as you say, Rafael, it is really nice to have them back here in La Liga and up so high. I mean, you look at that, you look at the three promoted sides from Ligue 2 as well in France, and of course we saw PSG stumbling last night against Evian, but you look at the way that Gangomp, who slipped up yesterday against Bordeaux, but should have won that. I watched that game yesterday evening, was covering it, and Gangomp are going a man up with 50 after 55 minutes. You know, they failed to completely throw the kitchen sink at Bordeaux until it was almost too little too late. But Nantes as well, who have such great pedigree, and those two sides don't have the financial backing that Monaco have, but to be up in that top 10 in French football at the moment in Liga, it is great to see. It is, we always praise, I remember Ipswich a few years back in the Premier League talking about rises of these newly promoted sides having that wonderful year, but you always, I think, have to watch out as well of that second year syndrome. It's like the sophomore slump, I guess, in college football and whatnot. You do need to kind of just keep your eyes peeled, just in case second season comes around, complacency steps in. That's why I think Southampton have done so well, because they got rid of Nigel Adkins, but they brought in Pochettino, who has given almost like a rebirth of Southampton. Bringing in a new manager like that, even though everything was going well, it almost kind of takes away that second syndrome freefall that potentially, because you're reinvigorating the side with something completely different. So it's like a new first season in the Premier League again. And that's why I think we've seen Southampton do so well. And of course, Pochettino has been an excellent manager in general. I want to talk about the Premier League with you, Rafael, because we had a host of games last night, and almost every single one was spectacular in its own way. But we should start off with of course, the man who's making all the headlines this morning, once again for the right reasons. But these are the kind of headlines that almost make us forget the trouble that Luis Suarez causes for Liverpool season after season. An incredible game last night. Four fantastic goals against Norwich, who he loves scoring against. He scored 11 in his last four appearances against them. The pick of the bunch, arguably the first one, this bouncing volley, which on television last night, somebody said that nobody would ever think of hitting that. Now, Rafa, I've got to ask you first and foremost, do you think, though, that every kind of 15 to 25-year-old would have seen that bouncing ball with nobody ahead of you and just thought, sod it, I'm going to have a pop? Because that is teeing up so nicely for Suarez to lash, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's unbelievable, his talent and what he's capable of doing. You said it, you forget about all the stunts that he's had, you know, the racial abuse, the biting, and you take all that away. And to me, I think what's most important out of this result is it's not necessarily the goals, Ollie. It's the way he played after them, you know, really getting dominated, in my opinion, by Hull City over the weekend, knowing that Sturridge is out for 6 to 8 weeks, that being really brutal news to their whole campaign after the, you know, the strikers were off to such a great start. And Suarez saying, okay, this is my team. I want to make sure that over the next 2 months, we stay in Champions League contention, we stay in the top four, and that we don't just, you know, suddenly go back to what we've been doing the last three, four years. And just the way, the leadership, the way he was smiling when he scored the goals, you know, I watched him a lot at Ajax, and it's just something I haven't seen with him in a while. He finally looks, I don't know if the word's comfortable or settled, but he looks happy, and he looks like I don't know what the word is in English, but he looks embraced. He looks like he's ready for the role, and that's something that I haven't seen in Suarez in a really, really long time. And you can tell how much love he has from his teammates when he scores, and you know, I really wish him the best. I know he's had things in the past, but we live in the type of world where you always hope, you know, give people second chances, and so far he's done a good job. He's been doing a lot of community work from what I've read from different Liverpool blogs and from people I've had on the show from that area. So good for him, for everything that he's done for the club, and I hope it continues.
I mean, it is this crazy bounce back, as you say, the biting gate last year, the racial abuse with Evra the year before that, and of course the I want to leave Liverpool that is suddenly completely forgiven by Liverpool fans. I mean, if anything, Luis Suarez at the moment seems to almost epitomise what modern football is. The short-sightedness of the people around who in the moment will re-fall in love with him when he makes those sorts of performances that we had last night, but then will immediately almost cast him out without thinking when he turns against the club in any way, shape or form, or brings shame upon the club. What we do have to recognise with Suarez is that, and we've said it before here on World Football Daily, that whatever he does on or off the pitch in terms of how he handles himself, the diving, the cheating, the biting, all of that, there will always be an immense footballer inside that body. And that is still too valuable to Liverpool Football Club, especially this season, I think, when we are suddenly, after writing Liverpool off time and time again over previous years about how they don't have the depth, how they're not good enough, they don't have that world-class talent to take them to a next level, Steven Gerrard's on the downward slide, all of these reasons that we've said that Liverpool can't be title contenders and Champions League contenders and can't make that top four. When you look at this point in the season, there's nobody that expected them to be this close to this top four and inside that top four at this point. And whatever Sturridge has done, and I loved Sturridge at the end of last year. That's why I put him in my fantasy team straight away this season. And however good these two are together, I think the fact that they always have Suarez to rely on, as long as he stays out of trouble, can avoid bans and injuries, makes Liverpool that top four contender this year. You can talk about all the other changes that have happened with Coutinho coming in and the dynamic they've got going forward and the way Rodgers has tactically kept a two-man front line with the wing-backs and whatnot. But at the end of the day, Luis Suarez is such an X factor for this side that can get them out of almost any trouble. He is too valuable as a commodity for Liverpool to ever turn their back on. And I'm sure there's plenty of Liverpool fans this morning who are getting up and reading the paper and looking at what's been said about Suarez saying, I'm not going in January. I'm ignoring Real Madrid's and Dortmund's and Bayern Munich's and all of that. I'm staying in Liverpool. And I think you're right when you say that he does just look very settled and happy. Although he didn't look too happy when Sterling didn't square the ball across the 18-yard box for Suarez to have an easy finish and instead took a shot on himself. Suarez, right, even though he'd already got a hat-trick, was yelling at the poor kid, just kind of giving him an earful, saying, why don't you give it to me? And then a few minutes later, he goes and grabs his fourth. I mean, as I say, he just epitomises, I think, what modern football is about. Let's move away from Liverpool slightly, Rafael, because there were loads of games last night. Where do you stand on Manchester United at the moment this season? Are you writing them off for a title bid after this loss? Roberto Martinez's first ever win at Old Trafford with Everton, and of course Everton's first win at Old Trafford for a very long time. Do you write United off, sat down in ninth, way off the pace for a title challenge? And should we be starting to write them off for Champions League challenges?
Difficult answer, but I would say yes. I don't think that they're going to make Champions League. And I think that, you know, a lot of people forget that there's players on this team that are just, you know, Nani's not the same Nani that he used to be. Patrice Evra, these players are, you know, Ryan Giggs, all due respect, one a legend, right? We can both agree on that, Ollie. Mm. But he's older. And this, you see this across the whole team. And you do remember they have Rooney and Van Persie and these big names. But then they have the guys I just mentioned. And then, you know, you could go on and say, Michael Carrick. I know people think he's a fantastic talent. I've never been that sold on him. Kagawa hasn't gotten the minutes. Zaha, they're never letting him play. There's a lot of problems on this team. There's a lot of problems. Ashley Young is not the same player anymore. Danny Welbeck is incredibly inconsistent, in my opinion. Chris Smalling, again, another player that for some reason gets a lot of hype, but I don't see it. I think the Premier League is really, really good this year. You saw Sunderland last night give Chelsea a fight at the start, and they're in dead last. I don't see it happening. I think unless they make a big change in January, which they could do easily, I just don't see it happening. I just think there's so much talent. Arsenal are finally back after so many years of misery for all Arsenal fans. Even Tottenham, you know, I think could even finish better. Even Southampton has a shot. It's just, at the same time, an important thing is when Sir Alex had his first year at United, I think they came in 11th place. Things take time. You know, things take time in every sport. I cover college basketball the most out of any sport, and basketball. And when you build a program, you have a new style of play, and it takes time for the players to adjust to what you want to do, how you want to program the game, the tactics, everything. This isn't something that takes, you know, 2 or 3 months. It could take a long time. So I think, you know, United fans need to be patient. They have some good young players. They haven't gotten the minutes yet, but they have some good young players. You know, if Rooney does stay, that's very good. Van Persie, you know, has been injured for a bit, but if he comes back, they'll add a bounce. What's interesting, though, is they're doing well in Champions League. And that's, you know, that's what really it matters about. That's the joke also in basketball. You know, teams don't care if they're not doing well domestically as long as they're doing well in EuroLeague, which is the equivalent of Champions League in basketball, European basketball. So in my opinion, will they finish in the top four at the end of the season? No, not this year. But will they make Europa League? I think they will.
The thing is with United is we kind of said with Gio last week is they don't strengthen that central midfield area.
Big problem.
But do you think, because David Moyes, you talk about being comfortable and getting used to a team. Is this why we're seeing Moyes getting rumoured and linked for so many of his former Everton players? Because he's trying to bring that back. I mean, you look at Fellaini right now, who's come in this season. He hasn't been that saving central midfielder to replace Paul Scholes. And to be honest, I don't think many people expected him to be able to achieve that straight away. But even the fact that Fellaini almost isn't playing with anybody that he really clicks with and understands is making him look lost on the pitch. And it's making Moyes look lost both on the pitch with his tactics and off the pitch in with his dealings. I mean, would it not have been smarter for Moyes to maybe, rather than looking at somebody that he knows, like a Fellaini, to have maybe gone that extra mile elsewhere in the transfer window for another player? I mean, it just seems weird that Moyes appears to be wanting to build Everton at Old Trafford. And yet this Everton side that he had last year was obviously a great side. It did very well, finishing above Liverpool at the end of last year. But at the same time, it's not a Premier League winning side. United need to be bringing in players of a better calibre, surely, to ensure that they don't slip off, to ensure that they don't drop out of this top four. I think January is going to be a really big make or break. We spoke so much about if United don't challenge for the league, will Moyes get the boot? And everybody's saying no, he needs to be given time. But a number of people said if he doesn't get Champions League, that could be a big telling point in terms of David Moyes and his future at Manchester United. Yes, Fergie finished 11th, but this is a different time we're talking about here, and United rely so much for sponsorship alone on that Champions League burst for next year.
It's what you said. I mean, we've been seeing Baines from Everton, the left back, being rumored to go to United. So, you know, and also Fellaini, 27 million pounds. You know, it's to me, when I heard that, it's shocking. Was he a very good player at Everton? Yes. But was he the type of player that you bring on to United to win a championship, to win a Premier League title? No. And it's interesting to see that now that Sir Alex is gone, you know, we saw Thiago say no to Manchester United after it seemed like he was going there for months, and at the last minute decided to go to Bayern München. You know, I argue that if Sir Alex was there, that never would have happened. He would have joined Manchester United, and that's a guy that you really wish you had, a young talent who's fantastic. But I agree with you. I think they need to, in January, they need to bring in some guys that, you know, are very, very talented, not guys that have worked under Moyes. That, you know, this is in Everton. You said it. They finished above Liverpool, and they had a great season last year, but they didn't have a championship season last year. So I don't know. I think, as we say here in Israel, it's a big balagan, a big mess, because you're right. It's not, you know, when Fergie, when he got the team, they didn't come from winning, you know, a million championships and winning two Champions League titles. You know, they weren't what they were. He built what they were. He kind of got a team with all these stars on it, and he's struggling, you know, Cardiff. You know, tying against Cardiff is should not be acceptable for United fans, even with the lineup they have right now. I mean, it is what it is. But I think they're going to have to make some big changes in January. And very interesting, on my show, on the Kicking It With Rafael, we had a guest come on who said that no matter what, Falcao will not be part of Monaco come January. That this was all a plan and that he either is going to go to Real Madrid or Manchester United. So that's something to look at, but that's
terrible for United, surely, because if Falcao comes in, you're now asking Van Persie, Falcao and Rooney to fight for one-man spot in a lineup. I mean, if Falcao comes in...
That's not even what they need.
If that's the case, that's another failure to address long-standing problems in the centre-back position and that anchoring midfield role. I mean, I completely agree with you when you say, you know, ultimate respect for Ryan Giggs for what he's done as a player in his career.
Ultimate.
But 40 years old playing Premier League football, he surely can't be... He isn't sharp enough to play that role.
No, and he's not a guy that you want to count on a championship team. He's the type of guy that, I mean, for me, when I look at a guy like Yossi Benayoun, who's obviously past his prime, but was a great player. I'm not comparing the two. I don't want anyone to think that I'm comparing the two. But I'm trying to give an example of how, you know, people in Israel realize, okay, Yossi is beyond his prime. It's time for him to come on in the 75th minute or the 80th minute and just try and get that goal or that, you know, precise pass. You don't give him 90 minutes. It's not. He's 40 years old, and Yossi's much, much younger. But again, I hope no one thinks I'm trying to compare them, because I would never do that. but the point is that it's the philosophy of not, you know, putting all this pressure and burden on a guy to think that he needs to lead, that, you know, he needs to be in charge of making sure that, you know, the strikers get the ball. He needs to be in charge of the midfield. At age 40, in a very, you know, very, very good Premier League this year, I don't think that's realistic.
Rafa, we've got to... I know you need to get off and out
in about 10 minutes
or so. So I want to ask you a slightly broader question that covers some of the other big games from last night. Of all the must-win games for top sides, you know, you look at Chelsea last night away at Sunderland, where we have seen some big sides stumble, but I don't think anybody expected this game to be run as close as it was. For Manchester City on the road against West Brom, City have struggled on the road so much this season, despite, you know, bagging, I think it's 40 goals this year that they're on at the moment. And of course, you got Tottenham away at Fulham last night. Which was the most important win? For Mourinho just to ensure that he didn't stumble at Sunderland, for City to start getting a bit of road form, or for AVB and Tottenham to just get a win and shake these shoddy results that they've been having?
Yeah, this is something I said on my show yesterday. AVB, I mean, Tottenham... People are struggling. In Israel, believe it or not, there's a huge community, about 50 to 100,000 Spurs fans, you know, because of the whole, you know, jokes of the Jews and that part of London being Jewish. There's a massive Spurs community here, and there's a message board, and people are saying, you know, if he doesn't pick up his game, he needs to be gone. And this was an important win, especially against a Fulham with a new manager after sacking Martin Yole, a couple days ago, and bringing in a new manager. Now, Fulham scored the first goal, I think it was in the second half, and things looked very scary. But finally, and this is something that I had a huge talk with a lot of German journalists over the summer here when Lewis Holtby came to play for the German U21 team, and it was a disappointment. We finally saw something out of him, which I think a lot of Spurs fans have been waiting for a long time. Just the ability to have that kind of goal and that kind of explosiveness. He hasn't showed that at all. I mean, I know a lot of people... with Spurs were disappointed that they spent the money on him that they did and that they put him into the lineup. And I think he really paid off last night by scoring that goal and kind of igniting the flame in the Spurs fans and saying, okay, maybe this guy is worth it after all. But, you know, for AVB, Andres Villas-Boas, it was a must win. You know, it was a must win. They're falling down. They're falling down though, the standings, with Arsenal continuing to win. And as you said, Chelsea winning, they had to get 3 points. They could not afford not to get 3 points. And as a result now, they're in the hunt for top four. And that's their goal.
It is a big win for AVB and 3 points away from fourth spot in the Premier League at the moment, but more importantly, just ending that run of poor results. I like what you're saying about Holtby there. People described it as a Gareth Bale-esque goal, and I wouldn't say it was that. He's obviously not got the pace.
Yeah, that's too far.
but it was a wonderful finish. And for a player who came, I mean, we've watched him at Schalke and absolutely loved watching him and the development of Julian Draxler alongside him. Jermaine Jones kind of anchored that Schalke midfield and Huntelaar up front, and that was a beautiful kind of four-way spread, a going forward on counter-attacks for them. Holtby, though, hasn't done what he was doing in German football since arriving at Tottenham, and I think a number of people were a little surprised and a little disappointed. It would be great if he could reignite. I still worry, though, that with the mixing around that takes place in that Tottenham central attacking midfield role, the fact that players don't get long amounts of game time, extended game time in that position to get themselves settled, really. You know, there's a very good chance we could see the Dembele or Sigurdsson suddenly taking that spot of Holtby coming into the weekend. So I think a lot of it has to come down on the rest on the shoulders of AVB and his rotation policy, that we're not seeing the best out of Lewis Holtby at the moment. But I do think that City's win last night was immensely important. I know going to the Hawthorns, going to West Brom doesn't seem like too intimidating a place for someone like City to go to. But when you look at the fact that they were pushed towards the end as well, you know, a 3-2 scoreline. I know Anicebe scored with pretty much the last kick.